Today's program has been brought to you by Fairway Market, like no other market, a New York City institution that sells the best local, national, and international artisan foods for prices that can't be beat. For more information, visit fairwaymarket.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
And welcome to Femen About It on HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
I'm your host, Mary Izette.
And I'm Chris Kuzmi.
And we're here to talk to you about all things fermentable.
That's right. And we are archived on iTunes and we're archived on the website. But let's get right into it. Actually, no, we have a couple announcements. Mary, what do we got going on?
All right. There's a workshop this weekend that's being given by Angela Davis. She was on our Milk Kefir show a couple of months ago. It's called Preserving the Harvest, the Basics of Lacto-Fermentation. It's going to be on 61 Local, which is on Bergen between Borum and Smith Street. It's a fantastic bar. It's Sunday, July 28th from 5:30 to 7:30. It's right near the F and the G train, if it's running, that is. It's only $35. So, you know, basically all about lacto-fermentation and fresh veggies, preserving fresh veggies. So please... I didn't have the website here. But if you Google lacto-fermentation in 61 Local, you can find how to purchase tickets. We had a couple other things. The New York State Food and Beer Expo is this Saturday on July 27th from 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. at Biba of Williamsburg. That's on Kent Avenue in Williamsburg, obviously. I've planned a homebrew social slither / homebrew hang / pub crawl on Saturday. You can find that details about that. We'll put it on our Femen About It site tonight. It's in Astoria, Queens. So we're going to hit four bars and restaurants in Astoria, Queens. If you want to hang out with some homebrewers and you're free this Saturday, you are welcome to join us.
And in my new role at 508 Gastro Brewery, I've also found myself on the New York City Brewers Guild Council, and I'm in part of the event planning committee. And we are having our first fundraiser to get prepared for New York City Beer Week 2014 on August 25th, featuring a lot of local breweries and a bunch of breweries. It's going to be a nice block party, New York City Brewers Guild block party at the Wick, or the Well in Bushwick. Check out NewYorkCityBrewersGuild.com. And here we are. Welcome to our show, Femen About It. Today in the studio, we have Brian Strumpke of Stillwater Tills and Oils. How you doing, Brian?
Good. How are you?
And on the phone, we have our good friend, Jess Cottle of Y Yeast Laboratories. How you doing, Jess?
Good. How are you guys?
Fantastic. Yeah. Thank you for taking the time out to call in.
Yeah, no problem.
So we know you. We've met you several times, and we actually aired a former interview of your spring collection, the private collections of what you're working on at Y Yeast. And today, we'd love to talk about the summer releases.
Yeah, definitely.
So those just came out this month, right? And they're generally available July through September.
Yep. Exactly, yeah. They just started in July, and we'll be going for 3 months.
Awesome.
With them.
And I know our local homebrew stores are stocking them. So let's start with the first one. The first is Y Yeast 1026, and that sounds like an interesting... It's a British cask ale strain, so tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, it's a pretty neat strain. It is a nice strain. It produces a lot of, I guess you call it light fruit esters, like peach and apricot aromas. And it's a really good flocculator. It'll stay in suspension during fermentation, but when fermentation's done, it drops out really well. And compared to other English strains, it's probably a little lighter on the ester profile. It's not as in your face as some of the other English strains may be with ester production. So it has the potential to be pretty clean if you want to use it that way.
And what was the inspiration behind you guys coming out with that one in particular?
Well, it's one we've had in our bang for quite a while, and it actually was on our permanent lineup for a few years, but we just took it out of rotation, so we've had quite a few people request to bring it back for a short period.
Yeah, do you think that, are you guys having more, do you think more homebrewers are doing cask ales at home?
I think it's becoming a little bit more popular. I think doing cask ales is a little more complicated, maybe, than some other brewing processes, but definitely not too hard to overcome by most brewers.
Absolutely. And do you have any tips for homebrewers that are going to work with this yeast?
One of my tips would be not to be afraid to use it in a large range of styles. It's great in IPAs and all the way up to stout, so it's a pretty versatile strain.
Would you ever use it to use the yeast itself to cask condition?
Yeah, I think it would work well for that. I think most of the time it's not necessary to add a new strain for the cask conditioning part, but
right.
It'll work great for cask.
And before we go on to the next strains, Jess, I love you and your story, and what is it that you do particularly for Y Yeast?
Well, at this point, I offer a lot of technical support for homebrewers and professional brewers that call in or shoot email questions to the lab. So I field a lot of technical questions, but I also work in the QC lab and run a lot of the analysis on samples that people send in from different breweries. Mm-hmm. And then I get to travel around to different shows and talk to people about beer.
Beer is good.
Yeah, definitely.
Beer is good. But I like overhearing your conversations with Mary about, like, crazy, wacky fermentations, too.
Yeah, I enjoy the weird. I guess weird beers are becoming not so weird anymore, but I like working a lot with the lactobacillus to sour beers quickly and then mess around with the Brettanomyces, too. I'm usually not brewing a lot of American or English style beers. It's usually some oddball stuff.
Very cool.
We're in full support of that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Which brings us to, well, this is not so wacky, but it's a fun one. Your Beer de Garde 3725.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a pretty cool strain, too. It's great for that style that it's named after. It's typically pretty, it backs up the malts in the beers. It's often described as earthy and slightly spicy, but not over the top phenolic or cinnamon or anything like that. And it produces a lot of alcoholic character, typically.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's great for those beers, and it's great for darker, darker malty beers.
It can handle up to 12% ABV, you say, yeah?
Yeah, it's a pretty aggressive strain.
That's pretty right on.
Yeah, you can deal with it.
And then it looks like you have a recommendation temperature range. It's pretty wide, 70 to 84. So
yeah,
that sounds like, I have a lot of friends who brew Beer de Garde, and they wait until your Beer de Garde strain comes out. Mm-hmm. It's really popular with a lot of my friends, and I think that's part of the reason, because we have, a lot of people who don't have great temperature control in the summer, this is something that they can easily use to produce a really nice beer where they're not able to brew other beers in the summer.
Exactly. I think people can use this strain at higher temps and still get some good flavor profile of the beer, as opposed to some other strains that may be a little too solventy at warmer temps.
Right. Any tips for working with that beer as far as like malts or?
That one, because of the versatility of that strain, it's pretty forgiving. So I think that with this one, it's just to not expect it to clear up super fast.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to hang out in the beer for a little while, so be able to give it some time and conditioning if you can, if you need it to be bright.
Cool.
Yeah.
And then the last one, 3822, the Belgian Dark Ale.
Yeah. I would almost describe this strain as a strange yeast strain.
Why?
Strange. It's kind of all over the place. We had a homebrew, or it was a professional brewery festival out here in Portland called the Portland Cheers to Belgian Beers, and this festival was centered around a bunch of different breweries using a single strain of yeast. And one year, the 3822 was used, and it was really interesting to see how the beers were all over the place. This strain has a tendency to be pretty acidic, so the a lot of the beers that were made with this strain had a tart character to them.
Yeah, you have Flanders Brown in there.
Yeah.
That's one of the beer styles it's good for.
If you didn't want to mess with bugs, this is a strain that you could use to kind of get moving in that direction.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That's fun. Have you toyed with barrel aging with this strain?
I haven't personally, but quite a few people like using this strain with barrel-aged beers and with Brettanomyces because it will leave sometimes a significant amount of residuals for other bugs to munch on.
That's very fun.
That's fun.
Yeah.
That sounds like a good... Our New York City Homebrewer Guild, we're talking about doing a kind of a similar thing where we're going to use either a recipe and then change up. We're probably going to change up the yeast, but actually this would be fun to all use this yeast and just change up everything else. So especially based on what you're saying.
Yeah, definitely. I think that this strain it works really well for darker beers. But I think using it in a Saison recipe would be pretty interesting too.
Yeah. Even a dark Saison. I mean, there's a ton of Belgian-esque dark beers that you could try.
Definitely.
So what else have you been talking, going back to the Brettanomyces and the lacto, have you been doing anything interesting lately at Y-Yeast or anything new that you guys are working on?
Yeah, we're trying to dig up some new Brettanomyces strains to test out and see if we can come up with some fun stuff for future PC offerings.
Very cool.
The long-term testing, you know, it takes a little bit longer than Saccharomyces just so we can see what they're really doing over a few months of aging.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You said some of your strains are kind of in rotation or about being out there and not do when they show up again, are they pretty consistently the same or has it mutated a little bit or have any of them changed in character?
Yeah, so if they're the same number, then they're the same strain that you may have gotten 10 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
We definitely do everything we can do to minimize the variation or drifting of the strains. So we have quite a few things in place to keep drifting from happening. But if we ever do see some interesting changes, then we may bank that strain as a new strain and then test it later on to see if it's something worth using.
That's fantastic. Could you tell us, it gives a quick 101 on what it would be to culture a yeast from a bottle.
Sure.
As, you know, as cleanly as you would do.
Yeah, you know, are you talking like making a starter from a bottle culture? Or
yeah,
actually,
I've gotten my favorite Belgian beer. It's bottle conditioned and, you know, I'm going home with it and I want to keep it or mimic it.
Yeah, so the first thing I would do when you get that bottle home and you're ready to drink it is actually clean the bottle up a little bit. You know, clean it and run a little sanitizer.
The outside of the bottle before you open it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that just keeps the dust or whatever may have been on that bottle from drifting in there when you open it up. And typically what I'll do is pop the top in a sanitary way. And if you do have a torch handy, you could give it a quick flame over the top of the bottle just for standard sterile technique practice.
Mm-hmm.
And then try to find a place to pour that beer that's away from air that you wouldn't want to contaminate your wort with. And pour that beer into a glass, but save the last about half an inch in the bottom of the bottle. And then you can either flame the top and throw some sanitary foil over it and refrigerate it, or if you're ready to start some culturing right there, have a around a 500 mil starter solution sterilized and ready to go, and you can inoculate that.
Straight into the same bottle?
Yeah. Well, you can dump the bottle contents into your glass or whatever.
Either or.
Yeah.
Okay.
And what do you recommend, usually like 1030, 1035 starter?
Yeah.
Gravity?
You know, typically, well, I think a general rule of thumb is around a 10 Plato, 1040 original gravity wort. For growing up yeast, so I'd say anywhere plus or minus 5 points is good for that.
I like it.
Yeah,
that's fun stuff.
Yeah, and if you don't succeed on that first one, you might give it a shot with just a smaller volume of wort a lot of times the yeast is pretty beat up, and so you might need to start it off in a smaller volume.
And step it up?
Exactly.
Just keep stepping it?
Yep. Mm-hmm. I try to minimize those steps just because every point you're transferring is a potential for contamination.
Right.
Well, Jess, thank you so much for spending time with us, man.
Yeah, no problem.
It's great. I look forward to the time we see each other again. And do one more thing before you. Have you ever messed with kefir grains?
Just a little bit, yep.
The water kefir specifically is what you're asking.
That is what I'm asking. Mary's been making a lot of water kefir lately, and it's freaking delicious. And I feel like there's a lot of fun places for whatever's going on in there to end up in some beers.
What? Yeah. I haven't messed with the water kefir too much. A friend gave me some grains, and I smelled it, and it just didn't work for me.
It hasn't always been successful. I think we shared one with Brian earlier today, and the smell was totally off. It was very sulfury. Today.
Yeah.
But that was just an off. I mean, out of the many you've made, that was the only one.
The 20 ones that I've done from these grains, that's the only one that's happened with. But I think it was at the tea that I... that I added had something to do with that. I mostly do it with fruit, but it's interesting because there's a lot of tartness, so I think that's what Chris is referring to, and depending how long you let it go, and, you know, there's lots of stuff that's going on there, so.
Exactly, yeah, you know, the grains I got were probably similar situation. They were really sulfury, and I didn't necessarily trust the person I got them from, so.
Yeah.
I figured I'd save it for a later date and give it another shot.
Well, I encourage that. It's totally worth it. It's fun stuff. We're going to do a water kefir show soon, but that should be fun. But thank you so much, Jess. Really, sincerely, man. Thank you. Thank you for coming on the show. And we've got to take a quick break. And
all right.
We'll come back with Brian Stillwater Strumke.
Hi, I'm Steve Jenkins from Fairway Markets. You know, there's no more telling aspect, no more revealing virtue of a group of people having evolved in a lovely way than how they feed themselves, how they entertain, how they put food on the table, what they put on the table. Heritage Radio Network provides the clearest evidence that there's hope for us yet. Heritage Radio's like Fairway Market in that we both care deeply about what you're having for dinner tonight. Heritage Radio Network is not just about food, though. Every time I tune in, I learn something about things other than food, too. Architecture, design, stuff like that. But from where I stand, I still say, if you can't eat it, what's the point? For more information, please visit fairwaymarket.com.
Welcome back to Foment About It on heritageradionetwork.org. So we just finished talking to Jess Caudill of Y-Yeast Labs about their private collection. It's currently available at your local homebrew stores that carry Y-Yeast. They'll be available between about July and September. However, I know a couple of these are very popular. The British Cask Ale, the Beer de Garde, and the Belgian Dark Ale. So if you have a local homebrew that carries it, order it now. If you're in the New York area, I know that Bitter and Esters and Brooklyn Homebrew both carry the Y-Yeast private collection. So we want to thank Jess, dropping some knowledge. Also, it's great to see that Y-Yeast is working on developing some new Brett strains or isolating some new Brett strains for future offerings. That's pretty exciting with all the Brettanomyces experiment that's going on. Speaking of Brettanomyces, we're back with Brian Strumke of Stillwater.
Hey, Brian.
Hello.
How you doing?
Doing good.
So, who are you? What is Stillwater? In 2 minutes or less, because we're going to get to details and stuff.
I'm a dude from Baltimore with a shaved head and a penchant for making unconventional beers.
And you do it well, speaking of Brettanomyces, she says.
Yeah, because I met you, I think, back at Cooperstown, probably one of the BCTCs.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yep, years ago before you started Stillwater. So talk about Brett. Actually, I'd like to talk about the premium that you've done with Brettanomyces.
I've been doing I've always been a big fan of Brett beers in general. and I've been using a lot of strains from my friend Chad Jakobson of Crooked Stave. He's doing a lot of Brettanomyces isolation and such. So I guess Premium in general is one of my favorite beers that I've designed, and it's a it's a riff on the American post-prohibition light lager. So it's made with corn and rice, Pilsner malt, old school hops like Northern Brewer, Cluster, you know, all the totally untrendy hops that nobody wants. And it kind of came about like as we've had this, you know, we went from having the hop crisis, you know, a couple years ago, then to having just this explosion of like craft brewery like multiplying over the past year. So it's like hops are harder and harder to come by. So I was like, I really thought it'd be cool to design a beer with like hops that nobody cared about. Mm-hmm. And it's just pretty much I call it a deconstruction of the post-prohibition American light lager, which is probably the most definitive American beer that there is.
What was the inspiration behind using Brett?
I thought it would be totally cool to just like take all the same ingredients that like they're using in Budweiser or PBR or something like that, and show how radically different, like it's really nothing to do with the malt profile. You know, that beer it comes out so dry, and so and all that's really talking to you is the yeast character and the hops, you know, and it's not hops is embittering, and that's the other kind of annoying factor when people are like, oh yeah, it's hop, you know.
What's the IBU?
How hoppy is it? What's the IBU? This beer is 2 pounds of hops per barrel, but it's only 10 IBUs.
Right.
So.
And you do that because you charge it at the end.
Yeah. It's like, to me, I love hops, but I like the flavor and aroma of hops. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's nothing elegant about, you know, really brash bitterness.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, you know, if I want a hoppy character, I want to smell and taste hops, not just like just not get a charge of like an IBU charge to the tongue.
Mm-hmm. And the Brett really dries that beer out.
Yeah,
it gives you that kind of dryness that a otherwise really hoppy beer might, or like a really bitter beer might finish.
Exactly. I mean, and that's one of the things. Most of my beers, I'm really into dry beers, and so my IBUs are always much more on the lower side than people would expect, because there's not a lot of malt character in order to, you know, to complement and to balance it out. Like a 9% double IPA of sorts with a final gravity of, I don't know, maybe like 5 or 6 Plato, and that's theoretically 80 IBUs is not going to taste as bitter as a beer that finishes at 1 Plato. And has 30 IBUs.
Right.
And
I think it's great how your beers really do showcase the yeast strains and serendipitous that we had Jess on today with that. I mean, you play a lot with a lot of different yeast strains from all around.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, I guess I've always kind of touted the idea that at least with a lot of Stillwater beers, it's like I really build in the yeast as a very important ingredient in the beer, and a lot of times I may start with a yeast strain and then build the recipe around that.
Mm-hmm.
It's not always the case, but it's, you know, to me, it is one of the major factors. It's what, you know, if you've ever tasted wort prior to fermentation, then you know that there's a lot that goes on.
Yeah. Between then and the end.
Yeah. So, and I don't think it's something that should just be discarded. I mean, especially, you know, talking with white yeast, and it's like, there's so many unique strains out there, and there's so many interesting flavors and aromas that you can get out of there that may be relative to, you know, organic compounds like, you know, hops or flowers or spices and stuff like that. But it, you know, I just think it's some, you know, yeast is sometimes overlooked in the brewing world. It's just like, oh, this is just to get me from point A to point B. I want it. You know, that's why lagers and stuff have become so popular, like in the, like, American beer culture. It's like, because it's very neutral. It's not about, the yeast is not adding anything. You're just drying out, you know, you're just fermenting down the malt and hops.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's, there's so much more you can get out of a beer if you really take the fermentation into consideration.
you can take advantage of the multidimensional factors that, that can exist rather than the straightforward.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's...
And you're kind of you're obviously known for your saisons. I mean, known for a lot of things, but saison among them.
You're known for a lot of things, there, right?
And you do a huge variety of saisons. And, you know, we're in the end of July. We're nearing the end of July, heading into August. We had a lot of homebrewers just give up. I mean, I'm not brewing this summer. We have chest freezers to ferment in, but our kitchen's like, it was 92 degrees last week. So I'm not boiling anything. Yeah. But if I was going to, you know, for homebrewers that are still brewing or want to brew, saisons are a great choice.
Yeah, I mean, in all honesty, that's exactly how I ended up being the saison guy. Because when I was, you know, when I started homebrewing back in like 2004, I got really into it. And it was like summertime came, living in Baltimore, my house, you know, didn't have central air conditioning. So even my basement would get in the 80s. It was hot. And, but I wanted to brew. So I'm like, what am I going to do?
Mary and I are like, lucky you, 80s? That's awesome. That sounds cold.
Well, I've always been a fan of the saisons. Like, because I've always been, what got me into beer was like really interesting, like kind of Belgian things that have interesting yeast profiles. So I was like, well, here's my chance to master these really difficult strains that everybody talked about. Because like the DuPont strain is notorious for like, you know, like
it can ramp up there. Yeah, live in the 90s.
Stalling out. Stalling out.
And it's like, most people that have worked at saison yeast have experienced that at one point until you figure out the process that will get you. Once you get it figured out, those strains can operate like any other ale strain. But, you know, you got to give them the environment that they desire. but that was the thing. It was like my house is always, it was always so hot that I took advantage of it. And that's why I'll say, you know, I'm always the big component of, like, the best advice you can ever give a home brewer is to invest in a temperature-controlled fermentation environment. You know, it took me a long time in my homebrewing career to finally get I bought an upright freezer with a Ronco, you know, temperature controller and a 15-gallon ferminator or whatever. And that was... that was the best thing. And unfortunately, it was like right before I started Stillwater, and I bought it as an investment for the company. Just so I was like, if I'm gonna hammer out these, you know, some of these recipes and stuff, I need to really be able to control every bit of the process. Because so I was like, had to create an environment that simulated a professional environment to the best of my abilities.
Now I think another thing. So you do a lot of varieties of saison. I mean, I don't think there is one. I mean, a lot of, I guess, think of Saison DuPont as kind of the classic saison. But now, I mean, you do a lot of varieties and your saisons taste very different. And I mean, they're all very elegant and very drinkable and beautiful. But what are some of your inspirations or some kind of tips you would give for people that are designing a saison recipe?
Well, I mean, first off, there's no real rules. I mean, that's the other reason why I went into saisons, because not only was it, you know, it was kind of serendipitous that I had a really hot house and saison yeast, not all of them, but at least, you know, like the DuPont strain, that's a very popular one out there, really needs high fermentation temperature to finish its job. But the main thing was when I started homebrewing, it's like I didn't, if I was going to put that time and investment into producing something, I wanted to produce something new. This is an artistic endeavor for me, and I didn't want to just go out to just create another, to emulate another product. I was going to create another IPA for the world. And so saison to me was the only I'm very anti-style. I'm not a BJCP fan and such. So I want to see new things created. So saison was seemed like the most creative outlet, because nobody really knew what it was, and people still didn't know what it is. It's the idea of farmhouse brewing and working with what you had on hand. And to me, you know, that's what kind of turned me on to the whole thing.
So it's a wide open style, the common theme being yeast strains that have a certain character.
Yeah, I would say the one thing to look at, I mean, the other aspects, you know, I really like dry beers. So it's like, you know, I think the only common characteristic in a Saison is a dry finish, like, you know, dry, low final gravity and a yeast forward component. You know, it's definitely going to have, you know, it's going to be high in the ester and phenolic profile.
Mm-hmm. Would you recommend somebody kind of starting, if people haven't brewed Saisons before, like starting with maybe a basic Saison recipe and then thinking about, I mean, it sounds like, you know, you think a lot about what the yeast is going to add to this beer. So then have people drink that base beer and think about what other flavors or aromas that they might like that would work well with that.
Yeah, the most important thing is understanding your yeast. Like, you know, when you're using these Saison strains, you know, they're all lumped as Saison strains. And, you know, again, it's kind of funny, but it's what it really is about. It's like really, I mean, you know, this yeast is going to, it's going to leave its mark. You know, it's not going to just disappear. Mm-hmm. So understanding all of them. So, yeah, I mean, probably, you know, if somebody really wants to understand it, I would say, like, just make a straight up, like, all 100% Pilsner and maybe one kind of simple hop, like Saaz or something like that. And then go through all the different strains, you know, kind of like your single hop series or your single yeast series. Mm-hmm. And it's just a way to, like, you know, get familiar yourself with it. But then there's also other variables. Like, I mean, one of the other things that people, like, there's different temperatures. You know, I will ferment, depending on which strain I'm using, anywhere from the low 70s to the low 90s. And maybe with similar strains. And it's like, if you can get the strain to complete at a lower temperature or something like that, it's going to provide a different profile.
Yep.
And that's another fun thing. It's, you know, I'll use one strain to make something that's maybe, you know, more similar to a beer de garde, you know, in characteristics, because, you know, lower ester production and more smooth finish, but use the same strain at higher temperature and get a burst of yeast profile, and it comes off more like the, quote, Saison.
Right. I love that.
I do, too. Lots of ideas for experimentation.
That's right. And unfortunately, we are out of time. Yep. Thank you, Brian.
Yeah, man.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Thanks to Jess Codhill again of Y Yeast. So next week, Chris is going to be gone, but I will be in the studio with a show on adjuncts called Adjunction Junction, What's Your Function? So I'll talk to you next week at 7 p.m. on heritageradionetwork.org.
For Man of that.
Ciao.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.